And the number one item then is citizen comments. Are there any? I'm seeing none. I have no reports. Are there any committee reports? And next item, approval of the various minutes of October and November.
Second.
Any discussion, corrections? Seeing none, none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item is the resolution to approve the appointment of Sharon Acerbi to the library board.
Second.
Second.
Wait a minute, did you change? It's changed.
All right, just a minute.
No, I think that Cava goes before I...
Cava goes. The number six.
I'm sorry. Yes, correct. I'm looking at the old agenda here. All right, good. Todd, yeah. Very good, thank you.
There's another agenda that came out, huh?
Yeah.
There was another agenda.
There was 14 more amendments came out. Don't worry about it.
Dave's getting it right.
Top of the...
Terry and...
There were so many, I gave up.
I can read up here.
All right, Todd, why don't you proceed? Now, this is the issue that was publicized in the newspaper first front page.
Anybody else?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So in your packet, you should have been distributed a kind of a short bullet point memo.
No.
Nobody's received...
Oh, it was emailed.
Electronically, but I didn't see it.
Sorry.
I didn't get anything.
Just brush over it.
The report was emailed.
Yeah.
So who doesn't have a report?
Sometimes, you know, it would be nice if we got this stuff a little bit ahead of time instead of getting it the next day.
This was just presented actually last...
We didn't have a question on this one.
The presentation...
And also reading it in the paper before we even know it's coming out.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was, you know, some of your points are well taken. It was presented at County Executive Office with Kim and I there yesterday. And so it was...
Anybody else?
Last, so to speak, last minute item that we placed on tonight's agenda, hoping that you would discuss it tonight. We could have put the whole thing a month away, but it didn't seem sensible to put it a month away.
It's a good idea. I just wish I would have got it ahead of time.
No, I agree. This is
kind of,
yeah.
It's kind of like what the city did with the trolley. They were going to discuss it, and then they ended up voting on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a discussion? Or
just a discussion. We're not voting.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So not knowing that where everybody is in terms of how much information they have, and I'll try to just give a quick summary. We serve as the county's economic development organization. We're a public-private partnership. Part of that role, we oversee a sizable pool of revolving loan funds that we manage and are trusted with to use them to encourage economic development in the community. We've discovered a pretty interesting opportunity to perhaps develop a business park in western Kenosha County that we think is in keeping with our mission of having the county in position to attract and grow investment and jobs. In order to do that, we've approached the county and talked about a possible amendment to the county revolving loan fund agreement. We currently, in that county revolving loan fund, we currently administer in round numbers a little north of $3.3 million. Historically, that fund has been used exclusively for making loans to new and expanding businesses. Currently, we have about a $1.25 million cash on hand to that fund in cash reserves. What we would be seeking through an amendment to the CRLF is a modification of the current contract to include business park development as an eligible use of those funds. If the committee and the board were so inclined to support that, we would intend to take that $1 million from the county revolving loan fund plus another approximately $2 million from non-county revolving loan fund programs that we administer and make a total investment of roughly $3 million into a business park. That $3 million investment would be, parts of it would be for land acquisition to actually acquire the physical property that we're going to develop. And another part of that would be to help finance the infrastructure and improvements that would need to be made to the park. We are working closely with the town of Salem and their administration and leadership on crafting a plan that would allow us to buy this land, establish a TIF district, make the necessary improvements to the land, and then develop it as a business park as the park is developed and increment comes into the tax increment financing district, there would be a repayment of, you know, the financing used to make the improvements. We'd also be able to, you know, sell the land at a price, you know, hopefully higher than what we bought it for, so that, you know, kind of the way we would reimburse ourselves from doing this development is through land sales proceeds and tax increment financing revenue as the development becomes successful. So that's a really quick kind of overview of what we're doing. There's more information here, and I'm happy to maybe throw it open to you for questions, as tonight is intended to be a discussion where we present the concept, and then we have some technical work to do on the contract. And maybe just an apology in terms of the timing of this. Part of that was not wanting to get the cart in front of the horse. We had some work we were doing with the town of Salem on how we would structure this development agreement. So I think we were kind of late in talking to the county and its representatives and finance committee members about bringing this resolution to this committee as a discussion point. And so we were kind of reluctant to get too far out in front until we had some established some points within our agreement with Salem. So I see some questions, so I'll just stop.
I have a couple of points. The first is how would our financial position with this, taking the money from our revolving loan fund, impact potential other people who wanted to get loans for actual businesses that we could entice into the area? That's my first one.
So I think the impact would be slight to none. In that total $30 million, if we were to do this project today and we put $3 million out the door, we'd still have in excess of $10 million in our revolving loan fund programs today in reserves.
Okay. All right.
So there's a sizable amount of reserves, we wouldn't lose the ability after this investment.
Right. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. That's the first thing. The second thing I would want to know is you said that you would repay the, you know, put it back into the revolving loan fund when you made sales, correct?
Correct.
Okay. How are you going to apportion out how you put what where? Because you're borrowing it from 2, 3, 4 entities. How is that going to go?
No. We're borrowing it. There'd be $1 million coming from the CRLF, and there'd be $2 million coming from a non-county revolving loan fund source. So two sources.
Two sources. Okay.
And we haven't quite figured this out yet. It probably is going to, as we go through this, it's probably going to make the most sense to structure the CRLF money as a infrastructure loan. So we would loan it to the TIF and be paid back with TIF proceeds. But we have not necessarily figured that entirely out, but it probably makes most sense to use it as an infrastructure loan.
Okay, so it's really not you sell land out there and it comes back into the fund. You're still going to wait until they're built up and you get money from the businesses later on. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, it's not quite that simple. There's a $3 million expenditure we have to make for land acquisition plus improvement of the sites. So it probably makes more sense for us to do the land acquisition with the non-county revolving loan funds, and if that's how we structure it, then the land sales proceeds would repay that. And it probably makes the most sense to take the county revolving loan fund monies and make a loan to the infrastructure, and that would most likely be repaid through the TIF.
Okay. Okay. So have you had any, through the town or through your organization, do you have any interest for businesses that might want to come into that situation? I mean, it's new to us to be in the ownership of land business, the real estate business. Typically, as a politician, that makes me a little nervous. But, you know, I mean, I see we've had to do it around Brookside and around here. And, you know, I do understand that, you know, grabbing it now, not having to pay later is a great time value of money, etc. But how does it look like as far as developers or interest, or what is your feelers as far as that would go?
Yeah, we wouldn't be pursuing it or doing it if we didn't think there was demand for it. So we certainly think there's demand for it. I'm not going to elaborate too much on.
Oh no, I'm not asking for companies or anything.
But we think there's sufficient demand for it. If you look west of I-94, You would be hard-pressed to find a developable lot in a business park. They just are rare or do not exist. There are a few industrial areas and a few business parks. They are mostly fully developed. So if you're trying to identify a relatively improved lot that's available for industrial development, you are hard-pressed to do that west of I-94. And so we think it's kind of an unmet need. We think there's probably a fair amount of demand, companies expanding and that type of thing. We think there's probably also a fair amount of demand from out-of-state companies that would migrate towards that location.
Okay, the last thing is, I mean, back when I was in real estate, if you buy a house and you overpay for it, or if, you know, God forbid the market changes and you can't get what you put into it, that creates a problem. So I guess I would want to know what the exit strategy or the plan would be as far as you guys, you know, losing should this not take off.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have, you know, or do you just... You think that you have enough interest that you're going to make this money back, so it's, you know, you're really getting it at a good deal, and you know the investment is there. I mean, because what we're being asked to do in it, I understand it, $1 million is a lot of money, but, you know, in the big scope of the revolving loan fund, you know, I just want to know what you think.
Yeah.
If for some reason you buy this land and they don't come. Oh, yeah. What's the situation?
Yeah, fair question. I think that's one way to look at it, and I'll try to respond. Another way we also look at it is we're charged with being the county's economic development organization. We currently have about $14 million of loan fund reserves and not a tremendous amount of demand for low-interest loans. Banking communities being fairly aggressive, strong companies are able to borrow at incredibly low rates. Interest rates are at, you know, kind of historic lows. You know, as the county's economic development corporation that's supposed to spur activity, it doesn't do us any good to have $14 million sitting in the bank collecting next to nothing in terms of interest rate return. And so that money really needs to be out in the community working, and we don't see as much demand for just a low interest loan as we perhaps have in the past. So we feel like this is another way we could put the money to work that would serve the mission. So that's one way we look at it. You're more specific to your question, you know, what's our exit strategy? You know, I mean, we're going to be into the land. It's not very liquid. Once you have land, you got land, and you got to figure out, you know, how to sell it. I mean, we do feel like we're entering into this with a fair amount of demand and ability to sell it. You know, we're buying the land at a pretty moderate price, and we're making some significant improvements to it. So I'd be hard-pressed to figure out a scenario where we would sell the land for less than what we buy it for. That would be, I'd be hard-pressed to figure out that scenario. And probably our other, you know, kind of concern as a partner of Salem is making sure that the pro formas and the projections we're showing are reasonable, because we're going to borrow a fair amount of money to put the improvements into the site, and we need the tax increment financing to substantiate that investment and pay it back. So I don't know if I answered your question. I mean, we're thinking about, you know, is this a good investment? We think it's a reasonable and good investment. We haven't probably went to worst case scenario yet in terms of our planning, and hope we don't have to get there, but probably something we should just think about, and, you know, how would we liquidate if we needed to?
Yeah, I'm supportive of it, but I think these questions need to be asked. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially since we got the information and the thought came up last minute, and we're having a discussion on it. So I just really think that, you know, for our constituents and for our background, I need to have these questions answered. So I do support the project and what you're trying to do, but I wanted to make sure that we had our information and do our due diligence on the committee as well. So thank you.
I think tonight the idea was to present this as a concept and see what kind of support or appetite there was for it, and if there are questions or issues we haven't thought about yet, do them before you're asked to take action. So appreciate the feedback.
Thank you.
Rick, did you have your...
Well, my concern was somewhat answered by Jeff. My concern was, in the event that February 19th that we get to go ahead on the casino, there may be a lot of offshoot businesses wanting to start up in support and make sure that we had the funds available. You answered that saying we have $10 million in reserves, so I don't think that would be a problem.
Yeah, we feel like we have more than adequate reserves right now.
Okay.
Aaron?
With the change in the contract, because we've had business parks in the past, first time we're looking at doing this, I mean, is there a reason why we look at this now to change it to go this route versus, you know, other business parks in the past? Just the environment?
Yeah, the change and why we need a change in the contract is it's different in that we would have an equity position in the park. Other business parks that we've been involved in their development, be it Business Park of Kenosha or Lakeview Corporate Park, there's been a separate entity that served as the developer. And those two examples, Wisp Park was the actual real estate development company, and they had support or involvement of the city or the village respectively. Cava's role in those parks was really more helping market and recruit and develop business prospects and making loans to the companies that actually came into the park. We really, to my knowledge, weren't involved in the ownership and the development and the sale of the land. We were just an intermediary that helped finance some of the companies that came into the park. So that's the difference, and I think, you know, we're kind of suggesting the reason for that is we have the financial resources to do it. It fits with our mission. If those monies aren't put to work, they're not doing the community much good. In our view, there's a demand for this that isn't being met, and you know, we kind of feel like there needs to be a little bit of a effort from the public's quasi-public sector to kind of get the ball rolling on a development like this. We've kind of penciled out this Salem Business Park. A private development company probably would not pursue this. It's not a lucrative enough development in terms of the projected returns. It really will take kind of an effort like this that we're proposing between Cava and Salem to kind of get the ball rolling.
Okay. Further discussion, yeah. John?
Who takes the lead on developing it then? Salem?
It will be a partnership. The way that we've discussed the agreement, we would be the land owner. Salem would be responsible for installing the roadways, the infrastructure, the improvements to the property, and financing those through the TID. And, you know, then we would eventually sell the lots. But I think along the way there'd be a fair amount of cooperation on the development, the park covenants, the infrastructure. So it's really a partnership, but with Cava and Salem kind of jointly managing the development.
And a lot of that's been vetted already? There's been a lot of discussions on that already or not?
Well, we're not done with our development agreement and all necessary approvals. We're pretty far along in terms of conceptually laying out how we would work together as partners, and there's been a fair amount of discussion between Cava and town officials.
Kim?
Dan Campion is here tonight. He's one of the town board supervisors and the liaison between the county and the town. Dan, do you have anything that you want to add to this?
Yes. Again, my name is Dan Campion. I'm one of the town board supervisors in Salem. Just to give you a little bit of a background, we in the town of Salem realize that we need to have something as an economic engine within the town limits. And right now, we're typically either a bedroom-type community or summertime homes because of the lakes we have. Earlier this year, the town electors gave us authority to buy 40 acres that is adjacent now to this property that we're looking at adding to with Cava. So we see that we had to invest something into it to get the ball rolling, and that's therefore why we bought the 40 acres. Now it's developed to this point where we're working with Cava, and like any negotiations, there's always that roller coaster ride, peaks and valleys, so forth. But I think we've gone through quite a bit, and we understand one another because this is a new role for both of us. It's a new role for the town of Salem to be involved in real estate, to be in a developer's position, and we needed some guidance, and that's why Cava has also been working very well with us. Though they, in turn, are also, it's the first endeavor for them in this type of a relationship. So I think what, in principle, we've ironed out those big issues, that we're no longer on that roller coaster. We're getting into that level plateau area, and I think it's just some minor details. They may seem big at times, but I think that we both want to get things done, and we want to move forward with it. So we're looking at, as we said, looking at doing a TIF district for us. That's another new venture that towns in the state of Wisconsin can do. We think that we've got the resources to handle it. We're a town of 13,000 people. Some may not realize how big the town of Salem really is, but we are 13,000 people, and we've looked at some of the financials to date, and the board has given, let's pursue this even further, let's see what we can do. Now, we do have to come up with a developer's agreement. That's all the I's and the T's. So we're looking forward to it, and we're working with CABA and Mr. Battle. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rick? Yeah, I'm not an expert on TIF districts, and I know that some have presented a challenge to us recently. You said that the TIF would repay the revolving loan fund. Mm-hmm. What's the time frame? Do we have to wait for that to mature, or what's the time frame on that repayment?
Yeah, so the TIF district, I think the one that we're talking about here has a life cycle of about 19 years, and we put kind of a pro forma together that projects how much land we'd sell over a certain period of time, what would be built on the land that we would sell, what would the taxable value of that be, and it kind of generates a stream of income to the town. The town will issue general obligation debt to do these improvements, and so that would be that would take priority. The town retiring its general obligation debt would take priority. Our loan would be subordinate to that. So I think the scenario that we laid out would probably we'd be repaid, you know, maybe similar to a real estate loan we might make as CABA, we'd be repaid maybe in years 8 through 15, I think, are the years. So we'd be paid back about over a 15-year period, which wouldn't be all that different from us making a real estate loan to a company and being paid back over a 20-year term in amortization.
Yes. Further discussion?
So I think this was a very good introduction. I think it's
Todd said. Question. 40 acres, Salem already purchased, right?
I'm sorry.
You said Salem purchased 40 acres.
Correct.
And then CABA's going to get some additional land. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. So what is the total?
We will have about 82 gross acres net after infrastructure and wetlands and stormwater detention. We end up with about 66, we project about 66 net developable acres that we could sell.
If I could add something else onto it, a very important point of developing property, especially west, is the ability to have fresh water. Within couple hundred feet, I would imagine, of the first property. The town of Salem does have a 250,000 gallon water tower. So the area is really primed for development. We've got the infrastructure, not only the water, but we also have stormwater and we also have utilities for sewer.
You've got enough capacity to handle all the expansions?
Yes, matter of fact, we are going through a project right now where the first utility district came about 25 years ago. It was over-designed at that time, and it was supposed to last only 20 years. We've gotten 25. We're in a 10-year project now to upgrade and improve that particular facility. So the addition of the additional 65 acres, we have no problem with either from fresh water or from any of the gray water.
All right, further discussion, Aaron?
Just one more question on, so what you're saying with the need to look at this to use the money, has the request just gone down, I guess, over the past few months, or inquiries about loans, or you're saying just because of the banks? Or, I mean, just think about all the positive economic development we've had, the interest that we thought we've had. It seems like we're looking for a way to spend this rather than, you know what I mean? I mean, I like the economic activity that we're trying to do here in Salem, but the initial concern I have with somebody that, is this the best use of the money? you're saying that we don't have a lot of inquiries and that this is...
No, I'm not saying we don't have...
Gone down,
I'm not saying we don't have a lot of inquiries. I'm saying low-interest loans, the gap financing low-interest loans as a way to secure economic development is less important. Most of the... We've done, you know, 15 pretty sizable projects in the last 2 years. Very few of them required a low-interest loan from CABA in order to do the project. The companies were well-financed, could secure financing in other places, often at more attractive terms than we could offer. So, you know, so we look at that and go, that low-interest loans have traditionally been a big tool in the toolbox to secure economic development. Their importance has become less relevant. What we see as more relevant is if we don't have ready, shovel-ready sites for a company to build on, they're not going to wait for us to develop those sites. So we think it is an appropriate use to take a pretty significant amount of loan fund reserves that are kind of sitting idle and put them to work getting a business park ready so that we have shovel-ready sites to market and promote for projects.
Does CABA or do we own any other speculative land in the county right now?
CABA owns other real estate in the county through its foundation. We own a little bit of real estate, and through CABA we own about a 40-acre parcel in Pleasant Prairie near the Abbott Laboratories site. Yes.
Okay. Perhaps it would be important to tell them what you told the group yesterday about how the business parks are virtually full that have been in existence like Lakeview,
etc. Yeah, so what we view this park looking like would be more like a business park of Kenosha Phase 1. If you've looked at it, there's a draft site plan, but this is 65 acres. It's the smallest lot in the park is 3 acres. The biggest lot in the park is 9 acres. This would be, you know, a dozen small to medium-sized companies filling this park. There's really not much inventory of that type of property today. Business Park of Kenosha, with the addition of Kenall Manufacturing to the second phase of that park, is all but developed. There's a, you know, probably two very small lots remaining in that park. The Kenosha Industrial Park on 52nd Street, just west of Green Bay Road, is essentially built out. Lakeview Corporate Park does have a few small remaining lots, but the majority of the development that takes place in that park is of a much larger scale, kind of an institutional grade, pretty sizable type projects. And all of the development we see happening on the I-94 corridor is of a much larger scale, you know, typically 500,000 square feet and above in terms of the scale and the size of those developments. So we think this park, which would serve small to mid-sized companies and small to mid-sized developments, is there's demand for it. And you know, we think this will fit a pretty nice little niche.
Any others? Kim?
I think it's also important to point out that if you look on the map up here, on the west side of that road that's going into the park, the west side of it is the highway and fire department. On the right side, where we're going to have the lots start, those two lots right there, the first two, are already shovel ready. So basically, as soon as the deal is done, someone who wants to come in, we have a spot for them if they want to get started right away. So they won't have to wait the 18 to 24 months to get up and running.
Yeah, that's an important point. I mean, we feel the timing is good and there's a fair amount of demand for this type of park. We like the fact that we could be going vertical on some of the sites that are closest to the existing roadway while we're building out the infrastructure in the rest of the park. So if we have immediate demand, which we may, you know, we could service it with a site that's very close to the existing infrastructure while we're building out the balance of the park.
Further discussion? Dave?
So I think Todd at the front end said our purpose tonight was just to provide exposure to this concept. You'll be taking no action tonight. I want to be sure everyone has all the documents and any other information they want in order to help so that you feel prepared. We'll bring a resolution to the committee on February 12th Between now and then, if you have any questions or if anything comes up, we can address that. But February 12th, this committee then will have a resolution in front of it to amend the current deal. Corp Counsel, and Bernie's the one doing the review, is going to work with CABA, and I'll also help to update the contract so that it allows this kind of a deal to be done. Corp Counsel, I think you may know that Corp Counsel has already advised us in the past on this, and it is lawful for the county to be involved in this way. So really our main thing is just to update the contract and allow us to do a deal like this in addition to the traditional revolving loan fund purpose that the contract used to have in the past. So that's my comment.
All right, thank you. Any other discussion before we move on? All right, good. Then we will have this on the agenda next meeting to act upon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.
All right, the next two items are similar. The two appointments, the one to the Library Board, one to the Civil Service Commission, and Bob, you're going to present those?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Good evening to the committee members. The first appointment would be to the Library Board, Ms. Sharon Serby. Ms. Serby is being nominated for her second term on the Library Board. She's been successful and a regular attendee at the meetings, has proven invaluable, and the county executive requests your approval of a reappointment for Ms. Serby.
All right, there's a motion. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next.
Nominated for a seat on the Civil Service Commission, and with us tonight is Ms. Lena Cooksey. Ms. Cooksey is a teacher and guidance counselor, and for many years worked in the Kenosha Unified School District. She is retired, but in name only. She is a significant community volunteer, volunteering for the Professional Women's Network. She was program coordinator for the Kenosha Racine Birthing Project, Kenosha Life Course for Healthy Families, KUSD Community Outreach Program, the Mahone Foundation, and a significant activist with the Kenosha Public Museum. She will be replacing Paul Trombino, who was retired after many years on the Civil Service Commission. We're thrilled to have her and respectfully request your approval of Ms. Cooksey's Civil Service.
All right, there's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
She's retired. Yeah.
But no, she's not retired. We're going to work her.
I was going to say she's retired. She's still got a lot of
Would you like to say anything?
No.
Good.
See, I like you even more.
That's very good. All right, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The resolution to modify the staffing.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Since you passed the budget in November, we've had some changes in staffing, which has motivated this visit to the Finance Committee to make some modifications in the budget. We had a resignation of retirement and also kind of a relook. Let me explain each one in order. The Adult Protective Services Supervisor has left her position. It was a contracted position, and we are seeking to replace that person with a social work supervisor. Social work supervisors are common in the Human Services Division, and we would resume that job being placed in wage range F of the non-classified employee pay plan. The second is a change in the public works. In the budget, we had $6,000 for an in-range adjustment for a senior accountant after reanalysis. We have determined that there is a need for mid-level supervision in the area of public works, and so we are seeking to reclassify the senior accountant to a public works fiscal manager. We will use the $6,000 that was in the budget to do that. and gain some supervision, allowing the Chief Financial Officer of Public Works to lend his talents in some of the major projects which are coming up for county government. And the third request is from the Division of Information Technology. Many of you may have known Jolene Kelsey. She was the telecommunication analyst here for many years. She retired a few weeks back, and with that, and with the significant change in the sophistication of technology that is managed by IT, we are proposing to replace the telecommunication analyst with a unified communication engineer. As those of you who've been here a while know, that results in a repointing of the position based on the requirements of it. And the points for a unified communication engineer are 675 points. That would place it in weight range F, which is up three ranges from where Ms. Kelsey's position was. The job descriptions have been attached. I hope you had a chance to relook them. And I would appreciate your support for these.
Discussion?
Well, sometimes those retirements, you can't ask you're done.
We'll do approve.
Second.
Any discussion here?
Bob juggles the books.
Discussion?
I juggle the jobs.
He juggles the people.
Oh, he juggles the books.
It's budget neutral, too, huh?
Yes. Yeah, there are.
All right. Any discussion on the issues?
Nothing serious.
Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
You skated today. Because you're
Public
about sports.
Gary.
Where's your
salt's box? Going well, right?
Yeah.
You got a lot left.
Yeah, we got. You know, we did use some last week. It was
never
a busy week,
so.
But it went well. I'm here tonight to talk about our asphalt paver. As you know, we do our own asphalt resurfacing on our county trunk highways. We typically do about 13 miles of paving, although this year we're looking at a fairly significant increase in mileage due to some state funding that has become available. So we're looking at about 5 more miles that the county crews can resurface this year. In the 2015 equipment purchase program for highways, we have a paver screed in the amount of $130,000. I have a picture of the paver. There's two components to it. There's the yellow part is the engine, the steering and the drivetrain. The back part is the screed, and that's the part that actually spreads out the asphalt and compacts it in place. This, on our existing paver, is completely worn out. The quality of the resurfacing that we were doing towards the end of last year just was not acceptable. So we budgeted $130,000 to purchase a new screed and attach it onto the existing paver. We did some research. We thought that we would be able to accomplish this. We have found out just recently that from the four different vendors that sell screeds, that three of them won't even bid on the new screed. The other one would bid but not support the screed once it's on the paver. The problem is that our paver is a 1995, and they've determined that it's underpowered to accommodate the new screeds. The technology has changed considerably, and three out of the four vendors feel that it's just not going to work at all. So, what our alternative is to purchase both components this year. And for us to be able to do that, we looked within the equipment purchase program that is in place. And what we're proposing to do is to postpone the purchase of a loader that we had budgeted for this year in the amount of $190,000. That loader, it's a 1983, it's 32 years old, and it's tired. But we would hope that we would be able to get through at least 2015 and re-budget for it in 2016. With that $190,000, we'll be at $320,000. We did receive two budget estimates for a new paver. One came in at $361,000, one came in at $350,000. We feel that when we competitively bid this new paver, it will likely come in considerably less than that. The paver that we would spec would quite have all the bells and whistles that a $350,000 paver would. It's not necessary for us to have all quite have a paver equipped to that extent. So we're hoping that it would come in within that range of $320,000. Of course, we would competitively bid it, and hopefully that would be the case. If not, we would be looking at any other additional funds within the equipment purchase budget that could come from underspending any of the other 2015 capital items, or possibly some highway capital reserves from the 2014 budget. So we would be using that kind of as a backup should the bids come in higher than expected. This was reviewed this past Monday by the Public Works Committee, and it was unanimously approved by them. So that is our proposal that's in front of you tonight.
To approve.
This does not require board approval?
Correct.
Because no new money, it's just a shift of money within a category.
Correct. Once the committee approves it, it's done tonight.
Move to approve.
Second.
Discussion? Yes, sir.
Just no, I think it says 220. You said it was 320, right? In the paperwork?
Just the paver component, the yellow part is 220, and then the street is another additional 130.
Okay, my fault. Okay, making sure.
Yeah, well, we do. Yeah, we have two options. Obviously, one would be to repair it. The other would be to rent it. The readily available to rent, and that it's a pretty easy calculation to determine what's in our best interest financially, whether to repair it or rent it one. So we do have some options available to us.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there are now a number of resolutions from the sheriff, and is that you checked there?
Captain Bob Halton. He speaks much better than
that. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We have our first resolution today is to suspend the competitive bid process for the purchase of $31,000 worth of tasers. $31,400 worth of tasers. The reason we need a suspension of the competitive bid process is that Taser International is the manufacturer, the patent holder of the piece of equipment that we want to purchase. No one else distributes this. It's literally as simple as that. This matter was presented to Judiciary and Law Committee last night, and they unanimously approved it.
Discussion?
Yeah.
We'll
do
approve.
Second. Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Yeah. We're going to switch seats.
Oh, okay. All right, and who's next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, excuse me. My name is Sergeant Mike Weicker. I'm with the Sheriff's Department, also Bomb Squad Commander. The proposal I'm bringing to you is to accept grant-funded money granted to us from the Wisconsin Department of Military Affairs Homeland Security to purchase a next-generation X-ray system, portable X-ray system, for my bomb squad. The current system we have right now is first generation, and as well as technology, we all know that technology is comes and goes. So this new equipment would provide my technicians with much more accurate and faster images of any particular suspicious packages or devices we might be examining. So my so the proposal tonight is to accept the grant awarded to us for $19,129 to purchase the equipment.
Second.
Discussion? Kim?
Just a quick question. How often do you use that?
We actually use it quite often. If it's if we get called out, it's basically our first line of defense before we need to actually damage a package or something that we're looking for. We would much rather use the X-ray equipment so we can examine what's inside it, so we don't end up breaking somebody's laptop computer or cell phone or something like that. This equipment works very similar to the same type of equipment that's used here in the courthouse entrance and airports, things like that. It's just on a portable scale.
Right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the third, all right, go ahead.
This third resolution request is for us to accept the $75,000 grant from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Bureau of Transportation Safety, to help fund our repeat drunk driving intensive sanctions program. It's a partnership that we've had with the Wisconsin DOT for about 18 years. I looked at the numbers today. Our population, our jail population, is 113 fewer inmates because there are 113 people actively involved in this program today. This award is, or this grant runs from July from 2014 last year to June 30th this year. That funding, along with our Sheriff's Department in kind and hard match funding, as well as client fees collected, will round out the total amount for their budget. We've been doing this for 18 years with the Wisconsin DOT, and we find it very successful. Like I said, there's 113 mouths we do not have to feed because they're in this program. Part of our proposal that I don't know, April, if it made it to the packets, was some statistics from the report. I don't know if that, I have copies if you'd like to pass them around to the committee members. Just to give an idea of what the populations are, and it was the back of the resolution. I don't know if it emailed maybe today. Mm-hmm. So this gives a little overview of what are the success stories, what are the people who don't graduate. It's very similar to the drug court system that we see a lot of success in.
All right, any discussion? Do you have a motion, Jeff?
I'll make the motion, and I have a question.
Second. All right, is there a second?
Second.
Jeff? Okay, I wanted to just do an offshoot of this. Is there any, I know that we as a board have asked this in the past. Supervisor Molinaro used to be a champion of this, and that was the drunk driving issue and the repeat offender issue. Is there any legislation up there that maybe we should bring to our executive committee or judiciary and law that we may be able to you know, jump on the back of? Because you know, I just hear more and more and more of the repeat offenses, and you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, then somebody gets killed, then it starts over again, and it's just you know, at some point, you know, we should really try to help get behind that. So, any update on that?
The state legislature reviews those statutes every year, and I personally attended several traffic conferences over my career, and it was always a topic of discussion. And I'm sure there are current laws that are trying to increase penalties. I know how I personally feel. I won't speak for the sheriff, but I know how I personally feel. I think it should be stiffer penalties from the first offense, because I don't think it should be a second or third offense to get someone to prison. That's my personal opinion, not the sheriff's department opinion. But okay, it's an ongoing process at the state level, I know.
I know I have no right to ask this, but Chuck, do you think you could kind of maybe review that and bring something to judiciary and law regarding that? You think you could do that for us without going through
certain bills or current bills?
Yeah, yeah. Anything that we may be able to send a letter on, whether it works or not. I just think that, you know, the more and more I read of that, you know, and then we get grants to help combat it, and, you know, I support that, but I also think at the same time I want to be kind of doing as much as we can. So I just thought, you know, I have no right to ask through the chair to have it put on our committee or anything. Just wondered if you as a favor would maybe see if you could bring anything to judiciary law, maybe give them an update and get it on their agenda.
Yeah, we can look into it. I think that I can speak for the sheriff and I. We kind of agree that Wisconsin is not as tough as it can be with OWI laws. It's the only state in the United States where the first offense is a misdemeanor. Everybody else is not. There's a very strong lobby that keeps that from becoming, you know, what it is. So we will look at that, but with all the pressure that's out there, and Captain's right, it's always top of the discussion, but it never seems to get where it needs to be. But we will check into it and see what's up there and what's going on.
Yeah, just see if we could get the law enforcement agencies and the county to sign on to something. I understand pressure and whatever, but I just would like to have our board, you know, kept apprised of what's going on with that. If you would just, as a favor to me, kind of have that put on their agenda and see what's out there, I'd appreciate it.
Take a look at it.
One of our lieutenants is on the Traffic Safety Commission, and I don't know if he's attending next month's Traffic Safety Conference, but that Traffic Safety Conference, when they have legal updates, we could have current information for you within a month.
I'd appreciate that.
That's Lieutenant Tom Pino.
Okay.
All right. This proposal was also unanimously approved last night by the judiciary and law as well.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. All right, any other discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of accepting the grant, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that completes those set of resolutions. Then we have the final larger issue of the Joint Services Report, the introduction of the new project manager and the district discussion of resolution to release funding. So if you would go ahead and introduce yourself and the new manager, and then we'll take it from there.
Sure. Good evening, all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rose, how are you, by the way? Previous life. My name is Mark Rausch. I've been brought on as a consultant, as a project manager for the public safety system, software system, as well as the hardware components. Just a general report. We're not bringing a resolution to the table tonight at all. So we'll just give you a brief update. First issue or item is the contract negotiations. Currently, we are undergoing contract negotiations. Every organization affiliated with the Joint Services Board or the team that I'm leading at the moment is fully engaged and participating to their fullest capacity. It's anticipated by the team that we will have a completed contract very soon, hopefully within the next 2 weeks. And the finalized contract will be presented to the Joint Services Board. And then contingent upon their approval, it will be the resolution will be presented to the county board of the whole. So the second point I want to report on are the costs. Costs are still being evaluated and negotiated with the vendor or vendors, considering there's also a hardware vendor involved, not only the software vendor. We do not have a final cost estimate at this point, but we are getting very close to the original estimate of $3 million. So we're, in my vernacular, we're well within budget so far. Some of the outstanding variables that will impact the final cost are things like the performance bond, the hardware, and of course the fleet maintenance software, which is tied to this project as well. And then once the final costs are determined, as far as the software goes, it's tied to the contract and we will present those costs to the Joint Services Board. So, last thing we'd like to discuss is next steps. Many of these are just common sense, obviously. We want to conclude the contract negotiations very soon in a timely manner. Once the final contract is settled upon, the team as a whole is going to review it, cross the T's and dot the I's and so forth, and that also includes our legal members as well. Then that finalized contract, as I said before, will be presented to the Joint Services Board. And then, pending their approval, and it's at their discretion that we will sign that contract. Then, upon approval, we will also form a resolution for the release of funds. So. And questions?
All right, any discussion? I hope you have some, because this has been, this report has been awaited for some time, and now we do have a manager, so. Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what I commented on when I gave the last report on Joint Services two months ago, was that we have hired a project manager and we're entering into negotiations. So really, there's nothing really to give us as far as anything to analyze or any numbers or anything at this point. They're finalizing the contract. It kind of would have been better to put on the agenda for next month when we do have something we can discuss. But, I mean, we are in the middle of negotiations, or not the middle, at the end, and we really can't disclose any of that, so we can't bring numbers or anything like that forward. So if anybody has any questions about the process or the concept or anything, feel free to ask. But that's kind of where we're at. Bill?
Thank you, Scott. At this point, how many software vendors are we negotiating with, and how many hardware vendors are we negotiating with?
Only one software vendor. This project went through the bidding process, or the RFP process. I believe, were there three vendors? There were three vendors on the short list. It boiled down to one vendor, which we are now negotiating with and have been since I've been on board in September. And hardware vendors, there's basically two. The software vendor will also provide hardware, and then the opposing bid is through a normal hardware vendor that the Joint Services uses at this point. So it's basically Dell and CDW and things like that. So it's very competitive in that regard. And we're well within our proper.
So my question revolves around this. If it's down to one software vendor, and they know that they're the sole vendor at this point, it's no surprise to anyone. Really, I would think that the only negotiating points you have are just the scope of what's going to be applicable for Kenosha County's Act, correct? In terms of particular programs and what's needed by Kenosha County.
Yes and no. There's many components to the agreement, which is one of the main pieces of the contract. I'll clarify. Contract, to me, consists of the agreement, which you just described, the statement of work, which tells us how they're going to implement this software and hardware configuration, and then the final piece is the acceptance test plan of all these different various software modules that Joint Services is going to purchase. It's quite extensive. So within that agreement, there's a one-time cost for the modules themselves, then there's also the implementation costs for the vendor or by the vendor to implement and install and test and train and so forth.
What about recurring costs for the modules? Are there recurring costs?
There is annual maintenance cost. We did negotiate that quite heavily recently, so we're trying to come up with a firm fixed price for years 2 through 5, the first year of maintenance right now. If I'm not divulging too much, but it's basically free. So And within that maintenance agreement or support agreement, there's no charge for upgrades down the road. So they have an upgrade schedule that they've conveyed to us that they'd like us to adhere to. So it isn't like we're going to have to go out and purchase another version of Word at, you know, X amount of dollars. It's built into the maintenance and support. So
I understood you responded to this in the white shop because you're making the whole process that there had been site visits to different entities that have software provided by this vendor. So both the committee and yourself are familiar with that. To what extent has this been done? How recently were the site visits come in?
Well, the site visits were done when they were making a decision on narrowing it down to who the vendor that we wanted to select was. They went out and looked at a couple of different things to see how the implementation, the change management, all the different things that went into the big process of what data conversion, which is the number one thing, I think. It's going to be huge. So there's a lot of pieces to this. But they did site visits at that time, and correct me if I'm wrong, but all the end users were invited to go on those site visits. So it's been a process, and it's been very, you know, transparent to the end users, and everybody's been involved in it all through the way. As you know, this has been not a sprint, a marathon. We've been at this for quite some time, and the due diligence has been done. I mean, there's not really a lot to report as you negotiate with one vendor after we've narrowed it down. So we did get a number, well, not a number, but a few good bids, and we put the thought and effort and due diligence into figuring out who the right vendor was that would suit our needs, and try to cover the most of the things. And all the end users have been involved from the beginning in getting this done. So site visits have been done to these places, and we are going into it with our eyes open.
Just from your recollection, Kevin, as well, when we talk about site visits, it could be, you know, one particular user that was visited multiple times, or could be multiple site visits to different users. Can you just comment upon that, how that whole thing played out?
Josh, you did the site visits. Go ahead and tell them.
Sure. My name is Josh Nielsen. I'm the communications manager for Joint Services. We did multiple site visits for multiple vendors. Okay. So we did comparisons of, there were two vendors that we were doing site visits for, and for each vendor we did multiple sites for those two vendors. For the current vendor that we're in negotiations with, we did Dodge County, a site visit to Dodge County, and then we did a site visit down into Kane County in Illinois, who are set up very similar to what we're doing.
Now, I know when you're doing hardware, it's pretty easy to say the replacement factor is longevity is so much period of time you can amortize and you can say it would be good for someone. Can we get a feeling from this vendor how long a system like this might be good going forward? Is that ever brought out in discussions and so forth?
Josh.
And I'll defer a little bit here to the project manager, Mark, but I do know that with what Mark had mentioned in his presentation is that this software vendor will continue to provide upgrades to that software package as long as we are under contract and paying the maintenance fees on that program. So as long as that company is in business and it continues to upgrade their system, we'll have somewhat of the latest technology.
But they're not making a claim as to life expectancy is 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. We don't really have a figure as far as that goes.
To my recollection, though.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough thing to answer, especially in this day and age. I will say that they contend, right, because they used to run on an AS/400 platform, which is practically old and sunset, right? Mm-hmm. So they recently went to a client server, web-based type environment over the years. And like I said before, they do seem to have a very concerted effort with at least a yearly release, if not 18 months. I know it doesn't address your question about the hardware, but they're not in the hardware business. So what they do is they recommend the platform that they can run on the most efficiently. So then it's a matter of negotiating with Dell or CDW or something of that nature. So in the grand scheme of things, I think from a cost going forward, hardware is probably the most cost-effective thing you can go
after. Hardware is easy to get your mind around because you know it has a certain life expectancy.
Right.
Software is a little more nebulous. So if I understand correctly, there really is not a good estimate going forward as long as the company you're dealing with is a viable entity and continues to be in business and
yes.
makes updates. Yes. That's my question.
Thank you. All right. Yes. And how long have they been in business, Josh?
That was going to be my question.
Over, I believe, over. Around 30.
Around 30 years.
Yeah, the 30-year mark rings my bell, too, but my memory is not what it used to be. So,
yeah.
But really so, somewhere around, hey, settle down there.
Talking about
but,
yeah.
They've been, we've had New World for 2 decades.
Yeah, so.
I didn't quite get the comment.
Yeah, he said that he's had New World for 2 decades, so.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been around.
They've been around. And there's things in place like software escrow, the performance bond I mentioned, things like that. So we are protecting ourselves against catastrophic failure, if you will. So.
Further discussion? All right, then we look forward to the next agenda item next month. You anticipate it.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right, let's move on then to the various reports and the bills that are being circulated in a moment. First item is a Historical Society Auditor's Report.
I don't know if, John, if you wanted to say anything about the audit. We just we distributed the auditors, the audit report for Historical Society. We like to put it in the package just so we have a record that they've provided their audit, and they've always been very good, and financially sound and look at the audit and
achieve.
No red flags
there.
No red flags. What reports do you get internally when you're with the Historical Society?
Monthly.
You have a nice foundation.
We got a good.
Oops.
You invest your funds.
Yeah. In Vanguard.
That's right.
$300,000 or something like that.
All right. You know, so we're
solvent.
Personnel, do you have something?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
You.
The policies and procedures which you pass annually at budget time have a retention stipend as part of them, and it allows the county executive to award retention stipends to employees who are eligible to retire, but decide to stay additional time. He is limited to $5,000 a year, and this year he has awarded five. It is my responsibility to report that to you. The five employees who have received retention bonuses are Fran Petrick from the Brookside Care Center, Al Schwartz from the Finance Division, Gary Sipsma from the Division of Highways, John Rudy from the Division of Parks, and Bernie Bash, the Corporation Council.
That requires no action.
That requires no action. That's a report.
Okay.
Thank you.
The Sheriff's Overtime Report, is there some highlight there that you want to touch on?
No, just that it's in the file. Same thing with the County Clerk Report. I don't have the report this month. It was very simple. When I look through it, it's very simple. It's not a lot of change, but I will start closing things out and start refining that report and turning it forward.
All right, any other reports?
Well, I thought I would touch on the Brookside endowment. And a few years back, we adopted some language that permitted the Brookside endowment. And more recently, we adopted a policy related to gifts. I think you remember, last year. So, we had some basic guidance, very much appreciated from Corp Council on. That it is permissible to receive a gift, and the board can approve it, and then we can delegate the spending of that gift to Brookside. So they can, use this kind of purpose of Brookside. If someone wanted to donate something to their estate,
So that's the scope of that opinion. But one other thing we're looking at is if Brookside receives a gift and the county receives that gift, then we're constrained by the laws on investing that cover county governments, which are very restrictive. We can't invest in stock, and there's a lot of other restrictions. So once the county were to formally receive something, any gift, no matter what we do with it, it's subject to those investment laws. However, if we wanted to sponsor an endowment through the Kenosha Community Foundation, where the gift would be passed directly to the Community Foundation, then that would be the property of the Community Foundation, and if there was an endowment established there that could only be used for the purpose of benefiting Brookside, you know, and they established it legally that way, then they could invest it the way they invest the rest of their money, and they've been very successful with their investment portfolio over many years. So that's the one thing that we want to also take a look at. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. There was a recent opinion issued that the normal opinion restriction goes to the finance committee chairman of the board and a few others. So the rest of you haven't seen it, but that's, I told you the gist of it, so you know what it says. But that's, so we'll be looking at that, and I'll be working with Bernie a little bit on that.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion? Right, so what will be brought before the committee would be a resolution proposing that we contract with the Community Foundation to administer that money?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have to talk to Bernie because it ends up just being the Community Foundation themselves establishing a fund on behalf of Brookside, then it could just be a matter of reporting it to the committee and making you aware of it. You know? So that's the one thing I'm going to research. We may have no formal action. If there is someone that wants to give a gift and they want to give it to the county and that's what they want to do on behalf of Brookside, then I'm not aware of anything out there right now, but if there were, then we would have to bring action for that. The committee.
On the trustees, we've been hashing this out for the last almost year, and there are some, the chairman said there are some potential donors, something like in the vicinity of $5,000 or something like that, that we don't want to put into the restricted fund because it's government bonds that earn about 0.25%, and the potential to invest it in a mutual fund possibly would be just another spreading it out a little bit. So it would be another addition to what we have. We wouldn't be putting any kind of big large money into it. But we're doing baby steps with it. We haven't really got all the things lined up yet. So
I think the idea is that we do more work on development of an endowment. I think if people can leave an estate or part of their estate to the purpose of Brookside, and I think now, right in this era, now is the time to look at that. And with some of the changes we're making to Brookside, it's even more opportune to do that now. So with the types of people that we want to serve at Brookside, there's more potential now than there historically had been. Yeah. So that's the idea. What John said is I agree with that.
All right, further discussion on any of these items? Yes, Kim?
Not any of these items, but Bob, when does the payroll system go in? The new payroll?
Oh, the change? Is that
change?
You sent that in April or May?
Yeah, I can't remember if it's April.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, April and May.
April and May?
Yeah, mid-April and mid-May.
Okay. I would like to get an update from the IT department on their projects that they're working on this year in March.
Okay.
And then, so if that could be on the,
you want to put that
on the agenda for...
Any other requests for the agenda? Any other discussion on items?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.